Hello and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday the 14th of November 2021. This is your host Nigel Creaser, and today we've got the second part of my interview with Gary Lloyd. He's a gardener, not a mechanic. This week, it'll be no surprise that the sponsorship today is about my book. I am incredibly excited this week because I had the hardback arrive. Project Manager Productivity Hacks in hardback. It's very exciting to get that because it felt really good. I like the little paperback. I was really excited on that. And that's a real pocket one. You can pop it in your pocket, carry it around with you, have them hacks available to you all the time. Hardback one is a bit bigger. And just got that bit more robustness. Obviously, it's available on ebook as well, and the ebook is also available via Kindle Unlimited. So, if you've got a Kindle, you can get the book for free. Or if you haven't got Kindle and you're kind of thinking, don't know, I might have. If you haven't got Kindle Unlimited, sorry, I can. If you look in the show notes, there's a link to a offer where I think it's 3 months for either 99p or free as a trial. And then it's not that long a book, so you'll be able to read it within that time period. If you have read it, I would love to hear from you. And even more, I'd love to see a review from you. So if you get a chance to do that, I'd love it. Anyway, that's it. I'll shut my gob up. Right, so what's been happening over the last couple of weeks heading into the penultimate month of the year in November? So I have had a few conversations and about the book, a couple of interviews. I've got an interview next week that I'll I'll be sharing. I've got another interview next week. And so I'm getting out there on the podcast interviews and pushing the book a lot. It's all about the book at the moment, all about the book. I'm all about the book. It's going well. I'm getting some sales. It was in the top three of the hot new releases for a few days. So I was quite pleased, and I've sold, I think it's three of them I've sold in Germany, which I was surprised. I'm doing no promotion in Germany, so that's quite nice. And if there are friends, colleagues from Germany on this call, I'm getting so used to conference calls. Listening to the podcast, delighted to see that you guys are embracing the book, and I'm hoping it helps. I haven't really said about the different things about, that are in there, but one of the takeaways I talked about on a podcast in a couple of weeks is that for many years I've moved my copied emails into another folder. So I just grab them, use Outlook rules to just automatically put them in another folder. Now, that in itself is quite a big mindset change that you don't read those. And I kind of argue that with a few people with it is that you're making a decision anyway. The data that you've got to make the decision on an email is limited. One of those data points is you're copied on it. So I use that as my tool for filtering, and I found it to be fantastic, and it reduces the chatter that you've got to try and wade through, try and get stuff. Occasionally miss things, but that's life. But it's about prioritization. You miss things even when you don't do what I do. And that's in the book. I talk more about it, about the tools and the techniques and why I do it and the reasoning and some of the sort of gotchas for where people have concerns of doing it. But if people get the book and do that, I believe that will save you oodles of time in your day. And if it can save you oodles of time, you can point that at other things you want to be using it for, like having lunch maybe, or getting on the road a bit earlier. So it's that one's out there for everyone. Do that and your life will be great. Even if you don't want to buy the book, I urge you to do that. It'll save you so much time. And so that's really, the book has been where my focus. I've been trying to promote it. I've been trying to push it out there. Trying to get visibility of it, which is, it seems to be gathering a little bit of momentum. On the podcasts, well, actually, I'm talking about me at work, really. I've been back at work now. Essentially, I am back. I'm still kind of on my agreed return to work, slower return to work. But that's really, it's because a lot of it's leave that I need to take. So I'm kind of 3 day a week, moving on to 4 day a week before the end of the year, and then full-time back next year, the plan at the moment. So things are going okay. I have a couple of little flags go up while doing some work, but now I've gone through the conversations I had with the counselling through the year, spotting where the little signals has been fantastic and worked really, really well. And I've tried to be as open as I can with people I've been working with as well. This year I've been off sick, I've been coming back, and if there's anyone out there who's been through or going through or is worried that they might go through some anxiety, some depression or something, I really do urge, talk to people about it. And sometimes talking to your family members, to your friends, isn't the easy thing to do, because they're just going to support you and say, whatever. But even that's better. Just kind of going, I'm feeling different. And when you're feeling different and behaving different, it's the people who know you best can actually say, well, I think that's going on. But they may not be the easiest one for you to talk to. But talking to anyone helps, even if it's a colleague at work who you're good friends with, but you're not the best friend in the world. Have a coffee with them, have a chat, be open about how you feel, because it makes a big difference. And I remember when a few years ago when I had some battles, I asked some colleagues at work, say, look, can you keep an eye on me? And they said yes, and they have done, and they still do. It's something that I'm feeling more like me. Something I hadn't realised until probably last weekend, really. I've generally in life been a person who comes up with bright ideas. Some of them are silly. Well, a lot of them are silly, actually. Some of them not that silly, and I find out that they're really applicable. And what I've found is that I hadn't realised until last weekend that these ideas hadn't been flowing the way that they used to. So over the weekend, there was a couple of things that popped up with bright ideas. Grab a lot of piece of paper, stick on a wall. They'll get thrown away one day. But those things you don't notice about you sometimes. And I think that bites at, I'm assuming that's part of the depression side of it, is that it blocks up our creative juices and things like that. So that's on that side of it. So glad to be back, glad to be kind of cooking on gas, if you like. Podcast wise, I have got, what is it, three interviews lined up between now and the end of the year, and hopefully those will come in for actually to be on the podcast. There are going to be some really, really interesting. One, talking to someone about hybrid working. Another is talking to someone about the way that we use marketing, or could use marketing. We've got two guys who, you'll hear from one of them next week, in a couple of weeks, a fantastic local team who have a brilliant marketing business, Codebreak, Joel and Andy, who I'm talking to, and I'm looking forward to digging down into how, as project managers, we might want to think about how we market our projects, especially when you've got an internal project and you need lots of internal things. But maybe when some of us who are dealing with the public as part of our projects and how we engage with those. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation, because I have some ideas of what I think should happen on it. And what else? Oh yes, Delivery Experts. If you guys haven't heard of this, Delivery Experts, Google it on LinkedIn. That's how you search for it on LinkedIn. Google has become the word for search. And in there is a group of people who I'm kind of imposter syndrome of thinking I'm involved with, where a question is posed and each of us has 3 minutes to do a video responding to what our thoughts are about it. And the latest one related to project management and certifications and whether that improves project delivery, and was posed by Gary Lloyd, who you'll be hearing to in a few moments. The next one that's coming out in a few weeks is about AI and how that's going to affect project management. So I've got some views on both of those and I've shared them. So, there's a nice diverse view, and it's really, on some of these topics, there's 10 people, 15 people who have given a view of what they think of the question posed. So it's really nice, really good place to get those slightly different lenses on a topic that affects our profession. And that's it really. I think I've spoken for long enough. You are probably eager to get on to the second part of the conversation with Gary, so you can learn out how to be a gardener and not a mechanic. And speak to you later. I think if you've been managing projects for 5 years or more, you have all been in a situation where you've had a project and you're starting it and you're looking at it and you're sitting with your technical team and your business analysts and all these guys, and you'll be sitting there at some point and you'll all be sitting there holding your head in your hands going, why the hell are we doing this project? Mm-hmm. Why? This is not going to give. This is someone's pet project. This is someone who's decided, I like that. I want it done that way. And whether a senior sponsor or whatever, or it's a legislative thing that's come down or something like that. But there's always so many. So there's always one where you sit there and go, and I think it's where you have the influence and are able to, as a PM, we should be questioning and raising issues to go, this isn't going to give what you think it's going to give. But it's quite the hard thing to do, because you're kind of going, I don't think I should have this job because this is not working. Yeah. Let's shut it all down. Let's get rid of everyone. Let's put them on something valuable and let's stop. But then you kind of think, the other side of my project management thing is thinking, oh, time, cost, quality. I need to deliver the time, cost, quality. That's my target. That's me succeeding in pushing a project over the line.
Yeah. I mean, a friend of mine, I was at last weekend, actually, I saw my first degree was in civil engineering, which is where I first came across project management, which was like back in Tudor times. last weekend, a group of us met up, and a friend of mine was, I can't say what role he was doing because people would be able to figure out who he is, but he was very senior on HS2.
Right.
And so we said to him, won't say his name, are you still on HS, running HS? And he said, no. He said, nobody working on the project believes in the project. Morale is so low that I had to try extricate myself from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to what you were saying, this is where I was coming from with Cotter before, I forgot to say, which was you get the notion of the hero CEO, or they might be the COO, or somebody that comes into the organization. They want to make an impact. And then, so they get this project, and this project becomes a test of their virility. The two of the most difficult things with projects, Nigel, I don't know if you found this, but getting a project started is bloody hard, and then stopping a project once it's started is bloody hard.
Yeah I think it is. Once it's got momentum, once they're a certain size and have a certain momentum, and you can understand it from a human nature point of view, once you've if you're doing something in your house, if you invest enough time and energy into it, that you become emotionally attached to it. Yeah. You become emotionally attached to what you're doing. Because at the end of the day, you've devoted part of your life to it. You've put that finite effort and
I'm
finite
gonna get this
time.
Damn thing done, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like, what was the point of that last 6 months otherwise? And there's always benefit. I think there's always learning. There's always benefits that for an organization, for individuals that can come out of projects, even if you don't deliver the projects. But that feeling, it just, it's a juggernaut that's rolling, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know one of the most
someone has to lose? Nigel. Sorry, go on.
No, go on.
I was going to say someone has to lose face.
Yes. But they don't have to. See, they don't have to.
If
people think like gardens, and if they accept that, see, it's one of the things about projects, which is, I mean, you mentioned sort of IT-based projects, which are what the project team rarely do is have an honest conversation with the sponsor when they say, how long is this going to take and when's this going to be delivered? And they don't turn around and go, we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
We've never done this before.
Or even when I've seen it where they say, we don't know, and then they are pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and told, right, well, work it out. Give us a guess. What do you reckon? And then and they actually get pushed down the line of making an estimate, don't they?
And then you get to the point where there's denial that the delivery date's not going to be met, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's this big planning powwow that's probably got about 30 people in it from everywhere. And over the weekend, a revised plan is hashed out, which everybody knows is going to fail again, but gives the right answer back. The alternative, I think, is the gardening approach, see, which says, look, what we don't know, but what we're going to do is we're going to run a series of experiments and we're going to deliver you value on a regular basis. Sometimes those experiments may pay off, sometimes they won't. But what we're going to do is to work with you on the business context and how that actually works, rather than just, you know, deliver chunks of stuff that we may or may not work.
Yeah. And that experimenting kind of, as you were saying before, you look at your mechanic and it's kind of, does it work or does it not? That's kind of where you end up ticking, don't you? And then
if you accept that things might fail or might not work, I mean, we all know this to be the truth, but as you said, Nigel, you get inside a project and everything has to be predictable. So, you know, anybody is, what did you say, over 5 years experience, you know, that's not the case.
It's absolutely right. And I think that, yeah, the again, with the garden, you kind of think I'm not a prolific gardener. I can be enthusiastic for a little bit of time. I like to grow tomatoes when I get around to it and things like that. But some of my tomatoes I've planted too late. I've not looked after well enough and they've ended up being green at the end of the year.
But at least they don't bounce. Right, like, well, the ones you buy from a lot of the supermarkets.
Yeah, and regardless, you couldn't eat them as green because they were a bit, they're not designed to be green ones, then, wasn't. But I make
chutney.
Green chutney, yeah, out of them. Now, I didn't deliver the project I was going to deliver, which was a load of tomatoes every year for the fresh, but we made something out of it. And I think that's the thing with projects and deliveries well, is some of those experiments you're talking about there aren't going to give you the fruit that you planned, but the fruit they do give you can be used, maybe not for the bit that you were going to use it for, but for something else within the project.
And you don't bet everything on it working, Nigel. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Taking low risks.
Yeah. What it might do is educate the team ready for the next project that needs that piece of technology. And they now know what it will do and won't do and how it can be used better. And the fact that it isn't fit for purpose for what you're trying to do this time.
Exactly. Exactly. But
suddenly there's another project running along going, wow, that we can do that twice as fast now because we now know how to do Magic Bean 7, because that's just or whatever.
Exactly. That program of work that you know, I was talking about before, from some of the experiments we did, like, you know, little experiments with customers to see whether they liked or something. We found out something we hadn't even conceived of because we were actually out talking to the customers, trying things out in bank branches, and the customer would say, why don't you do so-and-so? And you go, well, that's a brilliant idea. It's going to save us a shitload of money, you know, and improve. By the way, it wasn't just about saving money. It was about improving customer service, because if the processes are terrible anyway and you knock them into shape, you save money and improve customer service. But from experimenting, you find out things that you wouldn't otherwise find. Whereas if we'd have planned the whole thing and said, well, the project's going to deliver in two years' time, then we'd have had no clue. We'd have just delivered something that didn't work. Didn't deliver value, you know, didn't deliver the benefits that were expected of it.
Yeah. And the number of times I see things with proof of concepts, where proof of concept, and then there's an absolute assumption that as soon as you've done the proof of concept, it will work, and then you'll move on to the next bit. And there's no allowance in there for, right, what if it fails? What if the concept that we're thinking of using is not viable? Where's the recognition that you may need to have another iteration to prove something else?
Yeah, this is exactly why I use the term experiment, Nigel.
Yeah.
Because proof of concept, you know, the whole raison d'etre of the proof of concept is to prove that the concept works.
Yeah.
Not to determine whether it works or fails, or to get some new information. It's to prove that it works. And you, as you just said, and the plan is that it, that whatever the project is rolls on a week later, right?
And it's that's more, and a lot of the time it will, I think. I think there is a lot of time where you'll get a, where the technical team will go, we think that's going to work. We're pretty sure, but we've never done it. We haven't done it, checked it, but we just need to go through and understand what the bits and bobs are. And that's fine. But we'd never have that, like the scientific approach of, right, we need to solve a problem. How do we solve the problem? Right, we're going to do 50 experiments to solve the problem. They don't, and the old, whether it's true or not, of Edison and light bulb thing, and it's kind of, if the first proof of concept that Edison had done for a light bulb, and there, that was the only proof of concept we were going to be using, then we'd still be using gas lamps, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
someone would go, well, that project's not worth doing. We cancel it. It doesn't work.
Yeah. We had a project back in the mid 90s. People used to send out paper statements to people, and we had a project to an idea. Let's call it an idea rather than a project. An idea that we would put all the statements for a customer in the same envelope because they got them all on. They had multiple accounts. They used to get them on different days.
And so
we ran some experiments. The first experiment was just really asking customers what date they would choose, and we found out that everybody would go for the end of the month. And from a production point of view and a postage point of view, it was a complete nightmare. And we also found that some people would get to see statements that they wouldn't otherwise see, which was you know, sometimes one of the partners had multiple accounts that the other partner didn't know about.
Yes. Yeah. And, so they wouldn't necessarily want that to be,
they say, well, who is, you know, this bloke or this woman? And you know, why do they have such a healthy bank account? And we knew about some of those risks in advance, but then some of those we headed off by finding a way of manually doing the process that we were thinking about and trying it with just one, you know, just the people whose names began with C in a particular branch,
and find
out. Because even if you ask a customer, when would you like your statement to be? That still doesn't mean that you know. And we did all of this. So we figured all this out by running experiments, long before we pushed the button on what then was a big clunky mainframe system. You know, we'd really figured out, eliminated the majority of the uncertainty, but that still didn't mean we still, but then we still, there's classic risk management, of course, we still rolled it out gradually and could always roll it back.
Yeah. And then with those sort of things, it's kind of, you immediately think that's straightforward. And then you go, right, well, everyone wants it the same day. I've been to, with the bank, and I was involved in some smaller projects and was at the print center that we had down south. And when you realize the scale of those operations to print out those things, and you think, yeah, if you're doing everything on one day and then none of the printers are running for the rest of the month.
Yeah, that's right.
It's kind of, it makes it really difficult.
They were huge. I mean, I don't know if they still, I don't know how many people still get statements by post. I mean, all my stuff is electronic now, but in those days, it was a really big operation. We had a post office on site. I don't mean like a little post office. It used to, you know, the sacks of stuff going out.
The vans would be coming directly there, wouldn't they?
Exactly.
Rather than taking them somewhere and things like that. So it may even be the same business that we're talking about. Who knows? But
we'll check afterwards.
Whichever.
Don't do it on air, right?
Yeah, I imagine all the banks are all very similar. In their facilities and capabilities.
Identical, probably.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I was just, you know, I've just realised that what I haven't done in the intro was mention the fact that you'd written a book, and that's what we're going to chat about today. But I hope everyone's kind of got the gist of that. And just to make sure we called it out as part of this, is the book is called Gardeners Not Mechanics, How to Cultivate Change at Work. So that's the book that
thank you, Nigel.
Me and Gary have been chatting about.
That we didn't tell you about.
Yeah, we didn't tell you about. That's my fault as the host for screwing up there.
Can I do a plug for something else as well, Nigel?
Of course you can. Of course you can.
So my website is called gardenersnotmechanics.com, all one word. And based on the book, I'm going to be doing the pilot of an online workshop over maybe anything between 6 to 12 weeks, probably about 10 weeks in January. And the idea of the workshop is for people to work together with using the structure of the book. There'll be like a beginning of the week, there'll be a little bit of lectures, and then there'll be some homework to do. And then people will work on together with other people towards the end of the week on a real thing, a real change that they want to make at work. It could be a personal change, but it's better if it's at work. Anyway, on my website, if you go to gardenersnotmechanics.com/website, I'm looking for some volunteers to join a very keenly priced pilot workshop that will be running in January.
Brilliant.
You can cut that out if you want, Nigel.
No, that's absolutely fine. It sounds just looking at it on your website now as you're chattering away there with the picture of you with the two books and then one of your dogs popping in the background there.
The dogs are a thing. I've also got on LinkedIn, if people want to check it out, and there's a YouTube playlist of me going through the book in sort of like 2 minute videos to save people buying the books. And the only reason I'm mentioning that is I wanted to say, if you see those videos, then the dogs are a feature, not a bug.
They're there to add humanity to it.
That's what I'm attempting to do. Because otherwise, you've just got this Dalek.
Yeah. I doubt it's that quite like that, mate. I'm thinking about where we kind of talked about the reasons why need to change this approach and why the sort of things that are broken. Do you want to just talk about your part two a little bit and kind of go around? I can see the plan, prepare soil, plant, prune, weed, water, time out, stake, etc. And it's, do you want to just talk about kind of, maybe not too like your videos have got those, but anything you want to say about those, just to kind of jump onto that bit for people?
Well, what I did, how that came about was when I was thinking about writing the book, I wanted to give people practical advice. As we said before, there are lots of people that tell you that you're working in a complex environment or you should think in systems, but not how to do it. So I wanted to, the second part of the book, to have some exercises. And I had this phrase in my head, I've no idea where I got it from, the elements of gardening. And what I found was that there was a blog in The Guardian 20 years ago, I think, from somebody called Christopher Lloyd, who was a very famous gardener. And he wrote a blog called The Elements of Gardening.
Right.
So I thought, right, I'm going to pinch the titles. I actually wrote to The Guardian to say, is this all right? They didn't reply. To say, I'm going to use Christopher's structure. Is that okay? And so if the overall book is an analogy, gardeners, not mechanics, you know, think like a gardener, then of the 9 bits, I'll test myself if I can remember them in a sec, of the 9 elements of gardening, each of those is, if you like, is a sub analogy below the overall yes. analogy. And shall I go through them, Nigel?
Yeah. I've got the list in front of me, so I can test.
All right.
So I'll give you a mark out of 10.
Here we go. I've got my fingers ready to go. Right. So the thumb is up. So plan, prepare the soil, plant, water, weed, prune, stake, ensure good health, enjoy your harvest. That's nice. Yeah. So
slightly different order to what you got, but spot on.
This is a really important that I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things I really try to labor in the book is that it's not meant to be a sequential thing. Mm. This is what you do in this sequence, because all of those things are going on all the time in a garden.
Yeah.
It's not, I've prepared the soil, that's fine. In fact, one of the examples I give in the book is a project or a program I worked on where the person that was effectively the project sponsor planted their project and then walked away, said job done. Well, that's not the case. You need to continue to water it. You need to stake it. You need to prune it. You need to do all of that kind of thing. So, and all of those things, and because a garden is seasonal, you may be preparing the soil in one part of the garden at one time, but it may be a few months later you're preparing the soil somewhere else. Yeah. So it's not a sequential thing. And in the book, I don't know how we're fixed for time, Nigel, but
I've got as much time as you want.
So for each of those, I've got a little example of what you might think of as what that analogy means. For example, preparing the soil might be about stakeholder engagement, for example. In plan, I talk about purpose and vision. Watering, I talk about watering relationships and how, and I use an example of a project I did in Japan and how it was really important for me to go to Japan at least on a monthly basis to water the relationships, because that's really important to them. And then in ensuring good health, I talk about pests and diseases.
Yeah.
Not to say that any people with pests and diseases, but for example, you can say, well, what would an analogy for a disease be? Or what's a disease? A disease is something which inhibits growth. And you say, well, you know, maybe that's the culture. And how do I address the organizational culture? So what I've tried to do is to give examples that will stimulate thought, but not say, well, you think about watering as relationships, because you might think about it. The reader or participant in the workshop might think about it in a completely different way. It's really interesting because I said plan. When I wrote that, and I thought, well, when you think about plan from a gardening point of view, if you get in a landscape gardener and you ask for a plan, they're not going to give you a schedule of work. No. They're going to give you a layout for the garden. In effect, they're going to give you a vision for the garden. And before that, they're going to say, well, what do you want out of your garden? You want cut flowers, or do you want veggies? Why you got the garden? So first you start off with purpose, and then you go into plan. And so I was doing a talk where I asked, oh, what does a gardener think of what do you think a plan means in a garden? And I was ready with my answer, you know, purpose and vision. And I said, well, it's seasonal, isn't it? And I thought, shit, I wish I'd put that in the book.
but it's doing what you want it to do, isn't it? You're planting seeds with your book, aren't you?
there you go. Yeah, it's really interesting. So you can even say to somebody, I sometimes say to people, you don't need to read the book, you just need to read the title. If you accept that the world of work is an ecosystem rather than a machine, then how do you cultivate change? You just go, okay, now ruminate on the word cultivate. What does that mean? And if you just give people space, they'll go off and do it. But just as some help, that's what the second part of the book is. It's really just some examples. And I'd be mortified if anybody ever picks it up in the future and says, this is the way that you do it. It's not. It's saying this is the way that you can think about it.
So you can have someone with a Project Gardener's Manifesto coming out, something like that, and you don't want that.
Well yeah, you mentioned it. I didn't, Nigel. You know, I didn't. You've gone there. This is exactly what happens, does it not? You know, people, and it's like with the workshop, I'm kind of thinking, you know, one of the routes I could go there would be for certification. Now, you and I are both involved in this delivery experts, the Piner thing, aren't we?
Yes. When I keep missing.
You keep missing.
Them because they pop up and they're going, oh, they've got a short window. And I go, oh, I'll do that. Yeah. And then I haven't realized how short a window it is to opt in. So I miss the opt in and then they re-opt me in. And then I just like jumped on top.
You realize the listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
They probably don't, which is probably, So you mentioned it. You described it.
It was my fault. Let me come back to it. So this is where we get asked a question and we get 3 minutes to do a response, both by video. And they asked if anybody had any more questions. And I had a question, which was...
I missed that one as well.
Has the explosion... No, it hasn't been yet. Has the explosion in project management and change management qualifications improved the quality and success rate of delivery? That's my question. To your point, there are whole industries that are built up around now I'm about to reveal that, of course, it's a loaded question. The whole industry is built up around qualifications, whether it's agile qualifications, project management qualifications, change management qualifications, and training courses that teach people to pass the qualification. And if you want people to think that, and so with the workshop, you know, I was agonizing about, should I try and get a certification attached to it? And I don't want to. I don't want people methodologizing, making it into a methodology. It's not the idea.
Well, it's from what we've talked about, it's a mindset to what you're talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
And that mindset thing, it's about the management, it's about the leadership. And you look at some of, and I'll put my PMI hat on, and with your PDU collection, it kind of fits to that kind of, not the technical skills of project management, but that management, in quotes, softer skills that people talk about. And it's the art of project management. And I've said this too many times on this podcast, probably, in that certifications, tooling, absolute critical. You must learn how to, and it's, again, it's like the mechanics. You need to learn the vehicle you're working on. You need to understand the tools that you're using to work on that vehicle. You need to understand the settings and all that sort of stuff. And project management, all those certifications give us all that. And so you've got those abilities to be that mechanic. But what you're not getting is the knowledge to work out why it isn't working. You know, there'll be certain things you can triage, certain things you can fix, but what you don't get is that experience that you know that actually, when this happens, it might actually be this, not what the book says. And I always think about certification and training and qualifications is about giving you the tools of the trade. It teaches you, and my analogy I've used this, it teaches you how to use a chisel to sculpt a piece of marble.
You know
how to do every single technique in sculpting. You can get the shape, you can get texture, you can get detail. You know how to do that. But it takes time to do, was it David or whatever it is, Venus de Milo or whatever, to do it at the level where someone goes, that's an amazing piece of art, the tools are not enough.
Yes,
and I think it's the same in every industry. And I think just because you're a qualified accountant doesn't mean you're not a crook. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you're not very good. It doesn't mean that you're not very good. It means you're good at passing the exams. And right. And I think that's, and but I still think there is a, that gives you that, you've got to have those tools and you've got to have those teaching. And the, as a world, we want that validation to be able to say, to make it quicker and easier for the person recruiting to go, oh, they've got PMP, they've got APM. Yeah. They've got whatever. They've got Agile. They've got a Scrum Master. Oh, I know that they are at a level where they can pass that exam. I think sometimes people attribute past the exam and understand the tools. And that, and that's, I'll take that from me. I've passed a few of these exams and not always at the time understood the context until I'd applied it. Until I'd been in an environment where I was applying those skills, they're not meaningless. They're kind of a little bit ethereal. So I think I can see where I don't think those there's it's kind of half the job, isn't it?
Getting do you know, Nigel, when I passed my driving test on third attempt, the instructor said to me, this doesn't mean you're a good driver.
No.
It means that the probability is that you're fairly safe.
Yeah. You've reached a level that allows you to drive on your own.
I think one of the things we miss, I mean, one of my other roles for the last 10 years, I've been doing mentoring and coaching for world's leading business schools. And I think mentoring and coaching is really so important if we really want to develop good project managers. See, I was very fortunate that I landed out of business school in absolutely terror struck by inheriting that program I mentioned early on. But I just had such outstandingly good people around me. But we did that program, which was 2 years, and there was another program that followed on again in retail banking, which was 5 years. And over that 5 year period, because I was running at least notionally running the program, I got to see lots of projects. Because as you say, Nigel, if a project that's 6 months is not a big project, so even over the kind of, if somebody's been a project manager for 5 years, they're lucky if they've seen 10 projects, right?
Yeah.
So, which is not a fantastic amount of experience. And that's why the experience of others is, and so I just got lucky that I landed in a place for 5 years where I had really experienced, really smart people a lot smarter than I around me. And I just took, and you know, all the work I did subsequently was based on what I learned during that period of time. And there's a ton of it in the book, of the stuff that I learned in that intense period.
Brilliant. Well, I think it's been a fantastic conversation. It's a great lens into thinking about making change that you've put in here. And I think it's going to open up those conversations and those thought channels from people that maybe they haven't thought about before, and be able to help contextualize a lot of stuff. Before we wrap up and everything, and I think we've mentioned your website and your book, is there anything else you wanted to bring out from the conversation that we talked about, and kind of how people can get hold of you if they want to find out more, etc.?
The easiest way is just to go to the website, Nigel. All my contact details are there. And I think from there, one can find links to the other stuff, or just find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And right. Always happy to chat to people.
Good. Brilliant. Well, thank you for your time.
No, thank you, Nigel. Been fun.
We're going to be catching up on delivery experts, no doubt, at some point as well.
All right. Thanks, Nigel.
Thanks. Cheers now. Well, that was fabulous. Thank you very much, Gary, for all of your energy and insight into that. I think it's a fantastic way of looking at what we do. Wholeheartedly recommend grabbing his book, and you can delve down into the detail of it.
And if you want to grab a copy of it, there's a link in my on my website, nigelcreaser.com. Get a kickback. And there's, in fact, there's most of the people who've been on here, if they've got a publication, I've stuck it on there. I get a little kickback. Helps me afford the odd coffee set every so often. That's brilliant. So, yeah, again, thank you, Gary. And hopefully you all enjoyed that. I'm sure you did. If you want to support the podcast, obviously, big one at the minute, buy me book. I'd love to get it up there and get it somewhere up the charts in the project management profession area or in one of the Amazon charts, but that's my ego jumping up and down a little bit, my little chimp, as Steve Peters would put it. So yeah, jump along to there. There's links on the website at the nigelcreaser.com/, I think it's p/shop.html or something like that, but just go to the homepage, it's there. And if you don't want to take the plunge into one of my publications, grab Gary's, grab somebody else's. There's a whole bunch of fantastic content there that you could grab. And again, I get a little kickback from it. If you've read the book or if you've enjoying this podcast, a review would be so appreciated. A 5-star one, even better. But if you've got time on whatever platform you're listening to or whatever platform you buy the book, if you give me a review on it, it's really good. It helps me know that there's people out there. Sometimes I do wonder whether I'm just shouting into the dark of the internet. But more importantly than that, what it does is it increases the visibility, allows other people to spot that this is a podcast that they may want to listen to or a book they want to buy. On top of that, sharing on social media. If you see my stuff on there or you think, right, this is a great episode, if you share it with your colleagues on your social media or channels or whatever, your internal channels, really appreciate it. You saying this is good is way more than me trying to do anything else. Your colleagues will trust you, hopefully. And if you would like to throw hard cash at me, I have a Patreon page, and it's patreon.com/SundayLunchPM. And that's it, I think. If you want to get in touch, hello@nigelcreaser.com or idiot@nigel, whatever you want to put at nigelcreaser.com, it'll get to me. Please don't be too rude. We can have a chat or reach out to me on, shout, whatever, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on all of those, Sunday Lunch PM. You can grab hold of me there. If I don't come back to you straight away, it's not that I'm ignoring you, it's that sometimes I can be flaky and not spot on some of the channels, because I try not to be on them all the time. And that's it, I think. The only other thing then, the most important thing, is coming back next time. And come back next time, I think you'll really enjoy the conversation, because, well, I spit bigging that up a little bit, it's me, but it's the two-way conversation about productivity that myself and Joel have from Codebreak, revolving around some of the things I've got in the book, but some of the insight from him as well, and one of the things he said I've adopted as well that I hadn't got in my book. So there you go. And all it says to me, thank you very much and have a fantastic rest of whatever's left of your day. Cheers now.
Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.